You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Journey.
To the journey!
And I am Charlene Schmidt. This week I have with me, as always,
Tristan Riddell and
Lori Sears.
This week we are going to talk about a very Voyager-esque problem, because we're going to discuss resources that they had to replenish throughout the course of the series, because as we all know, being 70 years away from the next starbase, they couldn't just reload and then warp off to their next journey. This was a consistent problem. Or so we wanted to believe, or were led to believe in the beginning, maybe. We're actually going to talk a little bit about that, on whether or not this topic was capitalized as well as it could have been. So, to kick things off, though, I want to talk about the first and foremost supply that they were going to need with this journey, and that is, of course, food. First order of survival, right?
Yeah.
Does that mean that we're going to get to talk about Neelix this episode?
Maybe just a little bit. Yes, I think we have to.
What, just a little bit?
What? Maybe just a little bit.
What do you mean just a little bit? He's the main reason why they're alive. I mean, he's the cook. He's the one who told them what to eat. That one ensign, or lieutenant, I can't remember his name, he would have had poisoning and a swelling all the way up to his crotch if he ate that looked like an apple.
This is very true.
If it wasn't for Neelix.
But he did subject them to Leola root for several years.
Yes, I was going to say, he was the evil who introduced that.
I want to know so bad, out of almost anything in the Star Trek universe, I want to know what Leola root stew tastes like. I know it's going to taste bad, but I want to know, is it like mildewy, dirty? You know, like, what? does he not wash the roots before he cooks them? Like, what's
it's very possible. But this is Neelix. I remember somebody said, and I'm not sure if it was one of the actors or one of the writers, but they said that Leola root sort of tastes like a radish.
Mm.
And
I can see that.
If you were just eating that raw, like Chakotay did when Neelix introduced it to him and he spits it out, yep, that would have been my reaction too.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a vegetarian, so you know that he's used to eating dirt.
What? What are you talking about?
Oh, I heard that somewhere in a chat room. I heard they eat dirt.
You need to get off AOL, buddy.
I want to know, like, we all know that the main reason why that they needed to find food was to save power and not use replicators. Now,
right. They
had replicator rations, which, what do you guys think? What did that mean? Like, that meant, like, you could only order so many things per week? Or what does that mean? Or like you were only allowed to eat so much from Neelix, or what was that?
I think my understanding of this was that it was you only could get so many meals from the replicator, say, per week. And
I thought
the rest of the time you were stuck with Neelix.
I thought
it
meant,
what you thought, Lori?
I thought it meant you could just use the replicator that many times. I mean, I thought in general that's what it meant. You couldn't, it wasn't just for food. I don't know.
Well, you might be right about that.
Lori, I think you are right, because there was an episode where Tom forgot B'Elanna's anniversary,
right.
And he had to get like chocolates and flowers, right? And he had to borrow, quote unquote, replicator rations from Neelix. And so I think you're right on the money, Lori.
Yeah, there's actually a few examples of this. Remember the pocket watch that Chakotay replicated for Catherine on her birthday,
birthday,
that was replicator rations, and the locket Tom Paris got for Kes. It was something like 2 weeks worth of replicator rations.
Yeah, 2 weeks, but who's counting?
Three, but who's counting? Right. So, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
Now, I think the first time that we heard about replicator rations was in The Cloud when Neelix wanted to get coffee, and Neelix was like, that's not going to be appropriate.
You mean
what
Janeway wanted to get coffee?
Wait, what did I say?
You said Neelix.
Neelix.
Oh, I'm sorry. When Janeway told Neelix that she wanted to get coffee.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he pours her chocolate syrup.
Sludge.
Instead.
Better than coffee substitute.
Right, no.
Leola root coffee.
Leola root coffee. Now that would be something.
It probably had Leola root in it. That's why it was so thick.
It was those chunks.
Okay, so we have to ask the question, though. They could have Fairhaven running 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I can't believe you brought that up.
I know.
I'm really surprised. I don't know. I always thought it was a cop-out that they always explain this problem away by saying that the holodeck runs on a different power source than the rest of the ship.
Yes, and they can't convert. Right.
But okay, but I thought they ran on the same power source as the replicators. I thought that's what I understood. I thought it was all tied in together.
It's so complicated, I don't know.
I think we could make the argument that the holodeck recycles the matter that it...
Well, so does the replicator.
That it makes. Well, not if you... Well, I guess if you poop it, it,
that
it recycles it.
That is not what
it.
I'm saying.
Is that what you're saying, Lori?
What?
Are you want
no,
to talk about feces?
That's really gross. No. I'm talking about like a cup or clothes or whatever you... Don't they recycle all that stuff?
Well, after a while, but it still has to be... It's still... If you...
They don't have a dry cleaner. I mean, where do they wash their clothes? They don't have a dishwasher.
Well, how do you know they don't have a dry cleaner?
Well, okay, well, all right. I don't know that.
What do you think Neelix is doing in his spare time, man, when he's not cooking?
See, that's another job that Neelix does, so why he's integral to the Voyager crew. He is also the dry cleaner.
He's running a laundromat behind.
Morale officer.
Pretty much.
Okay.
You know.
He does it all. That's why he butts himself into every little aspect of running the ship.
I would not want him messing with my underwear. Sorry.
That is a really strange thought.
Sorry.
Neelix messing with your underwear. That's fantastic.
Good one.
Okay, so I found the reference. It was in Parallax, where they said that the energy matrix of a holodeck is incompatible with other ship systems.
Right. I still don't get it because doesn't everything come from the warp core anyway?
Yeah,
I don't understand
really
it, but
that. It's gotta come from somewhere. That's weird.
That's their stupid reason to justify running Fairhaven 24/7.
Exactly. I know it's a carnal sin for a Star Trek fan to say out loud. It's because it's what the producers wanted, but that's really what it was. It was a plot device where, oh no, they can run the holodecks. They can't get food for themselves.
Yeah.
Because we can make an episode out of a holodeck, but we can't make an episode out of tomato soup. You know, that's just
seriously. You can't have coffee, but you can have this fake boyfriend. Sure, go ahead. Whatever. That works.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's quit talking about Neelix handling underwear and instead jump to one of the really awesome kind of solutions that they came up with to address this problem early on, and that was the aeroponics bay.
Yes.
Sure.
Which Kes kind of took on as her project and gave her a little bit more purpose until she became Doc's nurse. And I thought, now that's fantastic. I really liked that idea to kind of just, you know, it's sort of like the movement we have going on here in the U.S. with, you know, more like farmers markets, growing locally, buying locally, at least where I live. That's a very big thing, just to support your local community and grow from what you have here instead of trucking it across the country.
And one thing that I always wondered about in conjunction with that is why wasn't that standard on a lot of ships? Because I guess on the D we saw the Arboretum that Keiko ran. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was just going to mention that.
And also there was some other sci-fi works that one big one was Sunshine, the movie Sunshine by Danny Boyle, which a key plot element was the use of their aeroponics bay. And it just makes sense when you're on a long voyage to have something of that nature that could be self-sustaining and give you food and just something that you take care of. And I thought it was fantastic, a fantastic device to use in the show. And I kind of wish that they made it bigger. But, you know, again, as we say a lot, it's all about the economics of television.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was very disappointed when, I'd say, by, season 3, they'd all but forgotten about this part of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do get a reference to it in another episode, but I think it's only like one other episode after Kes leaves.
Wow. So when she was gone, basically it was gone.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to mention it where I think it was Someone to Watch Over Me, where they said like somebody else was pulling a duty shift in the aeroponics bay.
That's true.
Okay,
Something like that.
I remember that now.
But it was one fleeting reference.
One?
I think it was only one. I mean, if other people can think of more, please like let us know on Twitter or write in.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it was only one. After she left, After Kes left, I think it was really only one just fleeting reference.
Wow. Yeah, that's really disappointing, because I really liked this idea, and I would have loved to have seen, as the years went on, them trying to come up with creative ways to keep this thing going, to incorporate new stuff, mm-hmm. and what about, like, I don't know if this would have anything to do with it or not, but this just sort of occurred to me, like, in Night, they're in this really dark void. And do they decide, are they trying to conserve power a little bit because, you know, there's emptiness for so long? You know, by this point in Voyager's run, they'd all but forgotten about their energy problem, it seemed like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was that, you know, time when they started running in gray mode, which I thought was pretty cool. I just love that they had a term for it, was gray mode.
But to
go back on the aeroponics bay real quick before we move on, did you guys feel like they should have spent, I feel like they should have spent as much energy and effort on the aeroponics bay as they did stellar cartography?
Sure, that would have made
sense. You wanted to see Seven over in the aeroponics bay instead of maybe stellar cartography?
Well, no, not necessarily Seven, but somebody else, just like, because they're like, this, like, we can grow our own food, we create a farm on our ship, which is completely possible, you know, if you look at what NASA projects for long-term spaceflight in the way far future.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like they wouldn't have a food crisis if they got seeds. You know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, okay, yes, they talk about seeds and they talk about growing in the aeroponics bay, but it was really just, whenever you looked at it, it was really just flowers. It just looked like an arboretum. Like, you didn't see corn, you didn't see potatoes, you didn't see stuff that we didn't understand. You know, it was really just orchids all over the place.
Now, granted, Kes found them awfully tasty in Elogium.
And then she set them on fire.
Yeah, this is true, that she burned the aeroponics bay.
She burned it all down.
She brought the fire and burned it down.
That
made me angry.
I know.
When I saw that.
It was so pretty.
I was like, what a waste.
I know. You got to start all over now.
Yeah.
Look at what you did, for shame.
It's like, make it grow and then destroy it.
Yes. Bring the fire.
Yeah. But then, yeah, you don't bring it back to life again, I guess. You just let it sit there and then nothing?
Maybe the food was off somewhere else and we just couldn't see it because...
We only saw the flowery aeroponics bay.
Yeah, we only saw the pretty part. I don't know.
Maybe.
So basically, this was just a great example of Voyager having fantastic ideas, using them a couple of times, and then not coming back to them or not utilizing them to the full extent.
Yeah, I always felt like there was no follow-through with this topic in general.
Right.
I mean, because let's face it, 70 years is a long time that you have to replenish resources. And of course, it did not take Voyager 70 years. But when you're trying to conserve, to just keep going with the possibility of needing to go that long, dang, man, I would be doing more than replicator rations. That's just me, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, granted, they're going to star systems and negotiating trades and all that sort of thing. But hey, let's face it, the Delta Quadrant was not a friendly place a lot of the time.
This wasn't something they could depend on.
Exactly. So you don't know if you're going to run into friend or foe. And if you're running into foe more often than you're running into friend, you'd better be relying on your own resources until you can find something.
That is key right there. I think that's a good point that you made right there. It's like, try to be as self-sufficient as possible.
Right.
And like you said, yeah, they traded and they contacted their species and everything like that. And that's what Star Trek is all about. And that's a lot of fun. And we get to meet new people. But in those times of need, it should be like, well, at least we always have the aeroponics bay. We'll have enough potatoes to last us for a long time. You know, like,
exactly.
Like, you know, we may not have, you know, creme brulee or Cherry's Jubilee, but at least we'll have potatoes and carrots. You know, that kind of thing. At least we're not going to starve.
Let's shift gears for just a little bit and talk about the major source of energy Voyager had to sustain. And of course, that was the warp core. And so we saw this kind of being a recurring theme here and there. I mean, they were always on the hunt for deuterium. And then occasionally they were looking for gallicite to reinforce the warp core or whatever it did, you know. And so they were thinking about this off and on throughout the entire series, because it's kind of important to have the warp core if you want to get home.
A little.
I'll give him credit for that. But, you know, all in all, I don't know. They didn't make too much of a big fuss over this.
Well, I mean, there was a few episodes mm-hmm. that dealt with deuterium and also that contradicted each other. I mean, the whole concept of deuterium is completely flawed if you look at Star Trek as a whole. There are certain... I think there was a TNG episode where they talked about how they could collect deuterium with the buzzard collectors. Just driving through space. It's like when you're driving your car and it recharges your battery just by spinning the wheels. You know, that's basically how they collected deuterium. And then there was one episode where Tom Paris said, oh, you know, you could find deuterium anywhere. And then later on, they have the episode like Demon, where they have to go into the aforementioned gray mode, because they're like, oh man, where are we going to find this deuterium? It's so hard to find. And I just don't know how that happens.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. I'm not really sure. It seems like this was a thing that the writers used when they needed a plot device, mm-hmm. and that was just about it. They used it at their disposal for their convenience and really nothing more.
You've constantly said that it's nice when Voyager remembers itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true.
And this is a key example of when they don't remember themselves. I mean, there's so many hardcore fans out there, especially today with DVRs and Hulu and Netflix and Rewatch and DVDs more popular than when they were in the 90s. Well, they weren't even around mm-hmm. when Voyager was on. But so many people do so many rewatches that you have to be on your game. Like, some of my favorite shows try really hard not to contradict themselves and know who they are, like Parks and Rec and Breaking Bad. If you want to take one comedy and one drama that I absolutely love, they are true to themselves, you know, mm-hmm. to the nth degree. And a lot of people say, oh, well, Doctor Who has, what, 40 or 50 years of material, and they never contradict themselves, which I don't believe for a second.
Oh, there's
but,
no way. They had to.
Yeah, and but the thing is, I guess we as Star Trek fans have a higher standard for Star Trek, and I hate it when I see this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's totally admit something here and say that we do expect a really, like, unfair amount of accuracy out of the people that make Star Trek for the screen, because they do have 45-plus years now of things to reference from,
right.
And we know after watching for years and years and years all the details, we expect them to get it right, and we always have.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it was 25 years or 30 years of material, we expected them to know it all and in better detail than us. That's a very tall order.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
But dang it, you work on the show, we want you to know your own material here.
Right. And we get personally offended. Like, we take it as a personal offense when they don't do what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm. Some people really do. Yes. Yes.
That's
yes,
true.
We're a very delicate bunch.
Okay. Yeah. So deuterium wasn't a big deal, then it was, and...
Yeah, they couldn't make up their minds.
Yeah.
No.
So that was really hit and miss. It just... I don't know. I just felt like it was... really up and down, like, okay, this is a really big deal, and then a few episodes later, I mean, they go through a massive crisis when you would think a depletion of resources would really hurt them, and then nope, every week, reset button, things are just fine, we're cruising along.
This is a hardcore issue for Voyager. I mean, this is
yes.
what I'd say most people complain about who aren't Voyager fans, and we talk about it all the time, about how, like, okay, think about it. Think about if they were running in gray mode for 3 seasons straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Now, that would be a little bit much.
I mean,
it would be cool to see them come up for water for a little bit, and then, oh, shoot, here we go. We've got to conserve again, and we're running into a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, phew, we got through that. Hey, look, shore leave planet. Let's have a fun episode.
Sure.
Ups and downs, and watch the crew go through the freaking ringer.
And you never get that.
I feel
that.
Like...
You never get
yeah.
that.
you never get that, and I'm okay with that because it's just I don't know how to say it. A lot of people are going to disagree with me, but I feel like there's a time and place for that, and in Star Trek you have to walk the line, because Star Trek is Star Trek. It's supposed to be hopeful. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be adventurous and towards the future. And if you have people at each other's throats because they haven't eaten for 5 weeks,
you don't have to have that. Yeah. But
well, that I feel like that's what people. It's like an either or situation. It's either like a complete reset where it never touches them, which some people think that Voyager is, which it isn't. No. And then you have Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And
right.
I feel like I know I'm going to get so much hate mail for this, but I feel like Enterprise actually was right in the middle in between that a lot of the time.
Right. And that's kind of what I wanted to see with Voyager, actually, was, yeah, they're on their own. And yes, they are still Starfleet, but they're going to have to innovate to mm-hmm. make it out there. That's what I really wanted to see more than mm-hmm. anything. I didn't want to see Battlestar Galactica, because we've said on this show before, yeah. Voyager was not Battlestar Galactica. It is Star Trek. It is yeah. hopeful. And you do have to have a certain line of idealism, I guess, for it to
there
be Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like they could have done a little more than what they did.
Sure. Yes. The carpets yes. could have looked a little more worn. I mean, it could have looked like they were out
no,
there all
no,
the
no.
time. I mean,
no,
really.
Laura, you're right. I mean, no, I think you made a good point. I mean, like maybe not just the carpets, but, you know, like have panels that are just fixed on the wall. Like have
sure.
maybe some stuff dangling down for a few times. Or like let's just see that a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it's easy to fix that, you know, but if you have the raw materials, like you could even just have a line of exposition. Like we're going to, you know, be able to find new whatchamacallit alloy.
Yeah.
And that way we'll be able to fix this. I mean, and that's why I said, like, in Enterprise, you saw that a lot. Like, whenever they got into a battle, you saw stuff dangling from the ceiling. You saw them try to duck their heads to get under it until it got fixed a couple episodes later.
Right. And that would have made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or what would have also been cool is seeing the ship incorporate things from alien worlds to replace a couple yeah. things that maybe they couldn't replace on their own because they didn't have a star base or they couldn't replicate it or something. I love the example of the carpets.
You
know, what if, say, just after a space battle here and there, some part of the ship is like totally just brought down mm-hmm. for a little while. They have to rebuild a lot of it. And on this alien world, there's like this little stretch of a slightly different carpet because they get it at from some race.
Deck 8 is all hardwood.
That they visit at
floors.
The time. Hey, that's yeah. going to work. Okay.
Yeah, maybe not specifically carpet, but stuff like that.
Well,
you know, like,
sure. You know what I mean, though. Yeah. Maybe not carpet, but just visualize parts of the ship looking just a slightly bit off because they can't exactly redo it to spec.
Yeah.
They just have to work with what they have. And so,
no, I think that's a great idea. I we did see that a little bit with Borg technology.
Yeah, they did. They did adapt some Borg. But
I
really
would have liked to have
it.
Seen a lot more, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I think they could have done more. That's part of where the innovation would have come in that
sure.
I would have liked to have seen. Mm-hmm. But, oh well, hindsight, right?
Sure.
So, all right, let's also talk about the very unique Voyager gel packs. Mm-hmm. Because this was a problem throughout the series. I mean, the Enterprise never got sick thanks to cheese. Thank you, Neelix.
He was just trying to help his fellow man, and he screwed up once.
He wanted to make pizza. Come on. That was
yeah,
really
yeah.
wrong with that.
He meant well, but like a lot of things Neelix does, it just comes to bite him in the butt and make everybody suffer.
I thought that they actually stayed pretty true to the gel packs, and I like that they said, okay, these are irreplaceable. You can't replicate these. It's like Latinum or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And you know, and they got sick. Things went wrong. When there was a problem and they just started blowing or, you know, shutting down, you could see them freak out. They're like, we don't have many of these.
Yeah,
we
don't
right.
have more. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what did you guys think about that whole idea of, well, okay, the ship pretty much runs on these things. Is it such a good idea to have them there? Because they always talked about, well, if all else fails, we could go back to just good old-fashioned circuitry. Is it worth the trouble to have that just faster response time from the gel packs?
Wait, did they say that they could just go back to isolinear technology?
I mean, they said it would be a major conversion, but if they had to, if worse came to worse and they ran out, they could do it.
God, that'd be like rewiring everything. That would take forever.
Yeah, I think, I mean, B'Elanna, just the very thought of it, I think, made her cringe. Like, just groan and, yeah, roll her eyes. I don't blame her, but I think it would be a major overhaul, and it would be her doing it, so I don't blame her.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, think about it. Do you really want to fill your ship with something that you could not replicate, that if they go down, you're dead in the water? Like, do you... Is that a smart idea? I mean, because we don't really know how much faster the gelpacks are to isolinear technology. I mean, they could be a lot, like, noticeably faster or just a little bit. It could be, like, upgrading from, you know, Windows 95 to XP? Or is it, you know... You know, like, or is it, you know, is it something grander, like tossing in your PC and getting a Mac?
Right.
That'll get the hate mail going.
Yeah, for sure. You get to respond to all those personally, mister.
So, like, if it's not that big of an upgrade, I would personally wait until there was something that was a much bigger upgrade that you could replace. I don't know. That's just me. And also, I like seeing data, you know, move the isolinear chips wicked fast.
Cool.
So you don't get to do that with a gel cap. Or not gel
the
cap.
The gel packs. Yes, yes. This is true. Yeah.
They don't have a data to do that. So
that's true.
No.
That would have been
data.
A
just
mess.
Little Naomi Wildman. She could put them back together. Just not as fast.
She just plays Kata Scott really fast.
There you go. So, I mean, I thought initially the gel pack thing was actually a very cool idea. But then as the series goes on and as I kind of get a little older, I think about this and I just kind of think, yeah, was that such a smart idea? I mean, it was kind of an experimental thing and they were doing this on basically it's a science exploration ship. And of course, they weren't meant to get stranded out in the Delta Quadrant. So if something were to go wrong with these things... Yeah, they were just going to contact Starfleet and say, abandoned ship, these things suck. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then, well, now they're stuck with them.
Yeah.
But,
that was another
I don't
one
know.
Of those. That was another one of those things that it brought it up every once in a while. It was a problem every once in a while, but, I don't know, just kind of forgot about it.
And we'll never know if Starfleet continues to use them.
They never mention it.
Right, because did anybody... else mention them on any other ship?
I don't think so.
Only in the novels. I mean, nothing on screen.
Okay, then. So technically not canon.
Yes, not canon.
Well, that kind of makes me want to believe that these things were not that fantastic.
This was a huge test. Like, Voyager in the Delta Quadrant, this was their new mission, you know, technically. And so, I mean... The Admiralty at Starfleet had a huge opportunity to gain knowledge of how this Intrepid class starship would prove itself on really long term missions, and you know the gel packs were probably one of those situations where they're like, we tried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know?
It was a nice thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but never mind. Sort of like the slipstream drive in Timeless, which they never really. You know, they don't keep going back to it because whatever they were using to power that was going to expire or whatever really fast.
Of course.
Yeah. Heaven forbid, though, if we keep pushing on anyway because it would get us home. Oh, no, we can't have that till the very end. But anyway.
They could have gotten home as lizards. Anyway.
Well, gosh, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. I mean, strand a ship, you're going to inevitably talk about, oh, well, what if we could get home with this, this, and this? And you're inevitably going to find some way. And then you have to have some kind of a weird cop-out way to just say, no, we can't do that.
No.
I don't know.
Because the show had to last seven seasons. So there you go. I mean,
Yeah, this was before the time when UPN was at the breaking point, and then poor Enterprise really got the shaft. It really did.
Poor Enterprise.
They did.
Poor Enterprise.
They did.
Yeah.
I missed that show.
Yeah. It's a good show.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. This will
be very good.
I almost had a seizure when I saw that announcement.
A seizure? Dude, that's pretty serious, man.
I know. I'm not like Matt Rushing's seizure, but... Like a metaphorical
seizure. Not the kind that we would actually joke about.
Right.
Yes. We're not that horrible of people most of the time.
Do you think we'll ever get a Voyager Blu-ray?
Oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope so.
Yes. I think it's going to be TNG, Enterprise, DS9, and then finally Voyager.
Well, I think we'll get Enterprise before we finish getting TNG on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. You think so? Well, the conversion's going to be easy, right?
Yeah, the conversion's, but it was shot in HD, mm-hmm. and they have the HD master, so all they have to do is just press it to Blu-ray. Like, sure, there's work to it, but there's nowhere near the kind of remastering that it takes for TNG.
Mm-hmm. True. So yeah, actually, you got a good point.
I think they might pump it out faster.
That would be cool. I just hope they don't skimp on the extras as a result.
I'm not a big extra guy. I mean, I know a lot of people are, and like you said, I mean, people need extras to justify buying it again. But I am such a high definition junkie that's all that I care about is good picture. Give me the best picture experience that you could possibly give me, and I'll find the extras on YouTube a couple weeks later. Like that's how I am.
No, I want those for my own.
I want more, more, more. I'm Veruca Salt when it comes to extras. But anyway, we've kind of veered off topic. So any other thoughts that we should add on the topic of supplies Voyager needed to renew throughout its journey?
My final thoughts on it is just they had some really great ideas. They utilized them well. They just could have used them more.
Yeah, that's pretty much sums
it up. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen some more follow-through. I would have liked to have seen a little more innovation, especially in the later seasons. But, I mean, yeah, great ideas to start with. Just wanted to see it through to the end. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, next week, we are going to do another in-depth character analysis, this time focusing on Commander Tuvok, our wonderful Vulcan on Voyager. So please stay tuned for that. As always, if you'd like to contact us, please go to trek.fm/contact. It will send us a message if you fill out that form, and we will get back to you. Otherwise, you can contact us on Twitter as well. My username is OTheProfanity. And Lori, how about you?
You can find me at LoriS68. Tristan, what about you?
You can find me at The Insane Robin, where you can also partake in my Star Trek Question of the Day at 10:30 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday.
All right, fantastic. So, in the meantime, please be talking to us about that. Let us know what you think about the show. We love interacting and getting feedback. And so, until next time, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey. Journey.